T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
The other complication is that it was a no-call. And our coaches and clubs have been very resistant, and there has not been support to date about having a replay official or somebody in New York throw a flag when there's no flag. They have not voted for that in the past. It doesn't mean that we won't. It's something that we're going to put to the competition committee, see if there's an answer to that. But the reality is that's been at least an opposition philosophically for many clubs.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of the commissioner of the NFL. He is Roger Goodell. And what he's saying there is accurate, that there's not a challenge system in place for non-calls. That is considered a judgment call. And the fact that, again, the call in contention here is one that there were two violations on the single play.
As wishy-washy was.
Pass interference and a headshot.
Yeah, and he was wishy-washy, I think, in terms of. It didn't sound like there was any change that was imminent, and I felt like that was what you wanted to hear. We didn't hear that. Just curious what you think in terms of, like, so now the next step, the introduction of the idea, the report from Adam Schefter that there's going to be a possibility that coaches can have an extra challenge to, throw a challenge flag for such judgment calls. Likelihood of that happening, and what's the process? What happens next? Does this go to the...
Now the competition committee will sit down and they will chew over all of these ideas. The good thing about this, Roger is correct there. If you battle your way through the sort of is it disdain that he has, or just aloofness, or just sort of this kind of, you get this feeling of superiority when he's talking about things. He's absolutely correct. This is not new. They have had proposals come up for various things, including non-calls, and they've all been shot down. Everybody is jumping at this idea. Belichick has been saying for years that judgment calls should be something you challenge. Well, he has. Okay. But no one has gone along with that, because everyone believes that would be an advantage for him over other people, quite frankly. And this is yet another way where he can get an edge in the game, and that's kind of why he wants to do it. Having said that, I think that it goes to the competition committee. They have to come up with something. They got a call, a very serious call, wrong, and that's something that they're going to try to address. But there is also this idea that you can affect more things than you really meant to, unintended consequences. Yeah. That's always out there. So they need to sit down and work it through and spend a lot of time figuring it out. And in my opinion, David, the nearest they'll come, they might make some sort of have an experimental thing used in the preseason. But I would be surprised, frankly, if they actually went so far as to get a rule change or get the system changed by the start of next year.
I would tend to agree with that. I think the sense of urgency wasn't there. But I want to get back to this idea. And it's not just you. It's not just me. It's not just this sort of complaining about the air of supremacy or superiority that you get, the vibe you get from Roger Goodell. I think it all factors into a couple things. It was 10 days ago, and we're hearing from him the first time. And we're hearing from him the first time on this important issue because that's the way he operates. There's this sort of a smugness or a detachment that you feel like, this will be important when I deem it's right. Important. And what has it done? Right, here we are, Thursday, 3 days before the Super Bowl.
Right.
The spotlight is not on the game
itself.
We're
not talking about the game. Yeah.
And it's taking away from the marquee event of America's most popular sport. And it is annoying. And I think you look at... Everybody says, well, why are you complaining about the style that he talks with, or the approach that he takes, or what he says and what he doesn't say? This is part of the reason why. You want to talk about how the Patriots special teams are going to manage against the Rams, how the Rams defensive line is going to be able to get to Tom Brady or not. What's the secondary going to match up? And all these things that are football things, the personality of the football team, yes, and the coaches. And right, here we are, understandably, complaining about the commissioner or criticizing, critiquing what he said because he waited 10 days to say it.
I agree. He's made this a bigger story, and now we're having a discussion of it. But, you know, this is the first time where we've had a chance to, yep, chew it over on the air because he waited as long as he did. And I think that there is a lot there that people are interested in. But I believe if you really listen to what he is saying and cut through what the way that he presents it, what he is saying is that ownership didn't want these rule changes. That ownership, he represents ownership. And he talked a lot about how there are 32 teams in the league, and I love that each team has their own way of going about it and has their own thought process and the way they go about things. You know, Roger Goodell is overseeing an operation of a bunch of old dudes that show up at those owners' meetings. You've been there and you've seen it. It is a shocking group of octogenarians that come walking into that hall. Not that there's anything wrong with how old you are. It takes a long time to accumulate the kind of money you need to get one of these franchises. And as a result, they end up with a lot of older people coming up with things. And you know what they want? They want things to remain the same. They don't want like their change. Profit. Yeah. That's all they want. Their profit, and they want to keep it the way it is.
The owner's meetings are sort of access to excess, right? That's the way it is. And you heard him talk a lot about the fact that in the past, this is not the first time that, you know, they've had this discussion about what to do about bad calls. And he reiterated this, and I thought this almost came across the strongest. And I think this is what you're saying. No, but in the past, there hasn't been a lot of momentum for if there's a no call, to give the teams the ability to review it so there will be a call or a flag thrown.
Yeah.
You can pick up a flag or determine whether something was a first down or a respot or a touchdown. But to date, there's not been a lot of momentum or desire to kind of throw a flag where there is none.
Change moves at a glacial pace, much like the octogenarian owners we're talking about. Okay? Well, I'm not kidding. Watching those people shuffle into a room is about as quickly as rules change in the NFL. And that's not taking a shot at anyone. I'm just stating fact. It is not something that happens overnight. They'd like to think things through, and they like to take their sweet time. And it was a long time to get review into the games. And there's still some people that think that, oh, it slows down the sport too much. So there's going to be resistance to this. And Roger, you know, here's the thing. I want to go back to Sean Payton, you know, perhaps wearing the Roger Goodell clown T-shirt. Here's the problem. The problem is that there's no chance the owners want him to replay that game. There is not a possibility, even though the rule exists, that he was going to go out there and say, we're adding 5 minutes tomorrow. No one is going along
with
that.
There's one owner that wanted that to happen.
Yes.
There's one.
That's right.
The Saints owner.
That's it.
Beyond that, there's no.
Nobody.
Exactly,
they don't want that at all. They want to move on, and they want to. And, you know, Roger said it, and frankly, he's right, that there is a human element to sports. We have seen blown calls in every play, all over the place. You want to do your best to get rid of them, but you do not want to change an outcome. And again, the Saints did get the ball back. They did have a chance to win. They did win the coin flip. They did get the ball first in overtime. They did have another chance to win. So it is hard to look at it and just because it didn't go. How many times would you replay it? Would you turn it into the U.S. the basketball Olympic gold medal back in whatever the 70s, whatever year it was, where they left the gold because they tried to replay the ending 3 or 4 times until the Ruskies won? Is that what you're after?
No, I don't think you want that. He said that and a lot of other things of most interest to, I think, Bears fans yesterday. He addressed the issue of Kareem Hunt and where that investigation stood and what the chances were of Kareem Hunt being on an NFL field in 2019.
Kareem Hunt, I think everyone knows that he is, that issue is under investigation. It has been. He is a free agent. If he is signed by a club, I think all clubs understand that he'll go on the commissioner exempt list. at that point in time until the discipline process has concluded. Whether there's discipline or not discipline, we would finish the investigation and then make a determination. That hopefully will happen soon, but we haven't concluded the investigation and we're working to do that. There has been a tremendous amount of progress, though, in that investigation over the last, I'd say, 30 to 60 days.
Last 30 to 60 days. And you wonder if the tremendous amount of progress in the last 30 to 60 days has given anybody close to that process an indication of which way it may go and how serious this may become and or how little time he may sit out. I think it's curious that there is some they seem to be closer to a resolution, which makes you wonder if the Bears are aware that they're closer to a resolution, which is why maybe they have floated this trial balloon as aggressively as they have.
I'm so fired up.
Yeah, I think that they're probably the way these things work is that you will be in contact with the league. You're not going to go out. You're going to have a very good feel for exactly what the punishment will be for this player. And you're not going to go out and sign him and then be shocked that he can't have him for 2 years or something. They understand what's going to happen. There'll be a very short time frame involved in this. And Kareem Hunt will be quickly enough signed and added to some NFL roster.
So knowing that they've had tremendous progress in the last 30 to 60 days, maybe nearing the completion of the investigation, how do you reconcile that with the idea that George McCaskey in the studio said that he had not yet watched the video?
Yeah, I don't reconcile it. I don't understand it at all.
I get it.
There's no fascination with it. I mean, if you watch the video, you might have a significantly different opinion than you did going into it.
Yeah, which makes you wonder if they have to know what they're doing here. If the league sounded as close to finishing this up and wrapping things up as they are, Bears know where things stand. They've got to.
Yeah, especially if they're interested in the player.
And they are interested in the player.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Great privilege to be a participant in this game. And, our team has earned its way here. A lot of hard work. We've had our ups and downs, but ultimately we're able to earn the spot here, and we're privileged to represent the AFC in this great game, and certainly a great matchup against an outstanding team with the Rams.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. There you hear the voice of Bill Belichick. He, of course, the one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game, Mr. David, and
probably the greatest.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
And I think we look at this year as an example of that. The Rams were flying high, and one of these teams that seemed fated to be in this Super Bowl, a team that was a young team with a young coach that made it step forward. And there were two of them this year. The other one, the Chiefs, and we just saw the Rams win and get through somehow in New Orleans, and I know we're going to talk about the call and everything Roger Goodell said, but they did get through that game. They came into it, and they couldn't get anything going early in that game, and they came back, they shut that team down, and they won that game in overtime. Conversely, you had the Chiefs. Again, these were the two teams that were headed to the Super Bowl since the season began, and they fell apart, and they ended up losing because Tom Brady, a team that nobody really thought, this is not the best New England team, but they get to the Super Bowl out of habit. And so let me just ask you this question as we head forward to this game on Sunday. Who has more talent? Who has more talent, the Rams or the Patriots?
It's a great question. You know, it's one that I think you don't have to wait till Thursday to answer, but because of the circumstances, kind of you look at it this way. And I'm going to liken this. Look, if you look at this game and you watch the two teams and you're in a room and you turn on a projector, or not a projector, but a video, you're watching the teams on videotape, and you're evaluating this from strictly a football perspective.
Yes.
Okay, so I compare it to yesterday's weather. All right, stay with me for a second. If you didn't know yesterday was the coldest day on record of the year, if you didn't know how cold it was because everywhere you turn on social media and turn on the news, people were telling you how cold you should be and how difficult this was, would you have known it was the coldest day since 1985 in Chicago? I don't know that you would have, but because of the surrounding aspect, because of everything around it, everything you're being told constantly that this was cold, it almost felt worse. It almost felt worse than it was. when you watch the Patriots, there's nothing about watching them on tape or watching their games that tells you that they're a better football team than the Rams. If I'm looking at this from a strictly a football perspective, I'm looking at the Rams, and they have more talent, and I think they have better, almost better scheme that you trust more, and they have better football players at key positions. But because of everything you've been told, because of everything you know about the Patriots, it's hard to pick against them. It's hard to see them as a team. You know, this is the greatest coach ever, the greatest quarterback ever, the greatest dynasty ever.
It might be the greatest dynasty in sports.
And because you believe it to be true, it almost is true. And I think that's part of the way you look at this game, is that I have no compelling football reasons to think the Patriots will win this game. And I'm leaning toward thinking the Patriots will win this game.
There were a couple of things said yesterday that I thought were really interesting. One was from Sean McVay, who said that it's difficult to put a game plan in against the Patriots because they don't play a system defense. They play, what was the term he used? It was like they play individual defense.
Matchup defense?
In other words, they change their defense to their opponent. Mm-hmm. So they don't, it's not like you're trying to beat the cover two. You're trying to beat whatever it is you believe Bill Belichick's going to come up with to beat you.
And every week is different.
So whatever your strength is, he's going to try to take away your strength. He's going to take away one aspect of your team and erase it. And it's a very difficult thing. And it's what happened with Kansas City. Just look at the numbers in that game. It was shocking to see some of their biggest stars effectively shut down in that game. And that's how New England goes about it. Now, McVay is a smart young guy that has a way of playing that he can shift a little, but really has a way of playing. So Belichick doesn't. It makes it difficult to put a game plan together.
So
that was an interesting comment.
Two things came out. Look, Sean McVay is going to be a coach on this stage for the first time, but I don't think he's going to be reflected in the game plan. I don't think that's going to be obvious. I think they're going to be aggressive. I think they're going to come out because of what you just said. It's going to take a couple quarters or a couple series to determine how New England is going to pick what they want to exploit or try to exploit, or the matchup that they're most worried about. You're going to not know that for a while. You're not going to know that for a couple series. And I think until they get to that point, I think Sean McVay is going to be aggressive. He's going to try to get on the scoreboard before you know what the tendencies are. And I think that when you think, okay, well, both teams will feel each other out early. It's the first time for Goff. It's the first time for McVay. I don't think that applies here. I think he goes onto this stage and he says, okay, I'm here. This is how we got here. Deal with it.
I thought the other thing that was very interesting that I heard yesterday came from Tom Brady. And Tom Brady was asked,
we're still here,
about the comebacks and his ability late in games to drive a team down the field and win the game. And Brady said that as the game goes on, the defense is on the field longer and longer, and there is a shift that happens later in games where the offense has the advantage over the defense. And the defense, the more they're on the field, the more tired they get, the more exhausted they are, the more you have an ability to beat them. And so all you need is the ball at the end of a game. And you can, it doesn't matter what the defense is or who the players are. If you have the ball at the end of the game, because you've played up to that point, even if you're trailing and still within distance, you have the advantage with the ball.
That's fascinating.
I thought it was,
you know what?
Genius.
It is genius. You know how much discipline it takes to play that way? Do you know that's why he is Tom Brady?
That's it.
That's why when you're sitting there in the second quarter and you're like, did he really just throw another 8-yard out to the tight end? Did he really just hit his running back for the 8th time of the last 9 completions? How frustrating it can be. Frustrating is the wrong word. It's methodical when you watch the Patriots run their offensive scheme because they don't worry about going for the big play all the time. There may be a chance that he could take that he passes on because he knows in the back of his mind what you just said is true, that if you have the ball last, you have a chance. I don't think you'd see a lot of quarterbacks who operate that way. I think because they're trying to prove themselves, or they're trying to do this or do that. They're trying to compensate for something. The Patriots just do it. They dull you to death. And I think
David, think about what you just said. You talked about Sean McVay and the young guy, and this is how we got here, and we're going to be aggressive, and we're going to do this. And then you got the other guy, and they're sitting over there, and they're saying, All we have to do is take their punch and stay with them and grind and get to a point where it's the end of the game and then it's our advantage as long as we have the ball in our hands. I just think it's too entirely different mindset.
It totally is, and I think it depends on the way that what you favor. What is more in line with your football sensibilities? And I think that's who you're going to probably lean toward in this game, because you know traditionally the way Bill Belichick operates is the way that traditional football coaches think. There's nothing traditional about Sean McVay.
It's how they beat the Rams to start what we have right now. This run of Super Bowls and this modern day dynasty.
The first one.
They're playing the high flying outfit that seemingly has more talent on paper, but they're gonna grind.
Stay to our game, stay in our plan. Don't get carried away. Don't take unnecessary risks, because that's what gets you in trouble too often, more often than not in football. Because that's and there's so much
bide
about,
your time.
Bide your time.
It's the old veteran biding his time.
Have the ball
the young
last.
Guy. We're going to overwhelm you.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Let's get to Joe. What do you think, Joe? You like that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You take away the home field in the AFC Championship game, and a lot of it is the same conversation that we had in that game against Kansas City. Of course, mm-hmm. The Chiefs' defense much worse. But again, who's the more talented team when you look at the
right.
whole roster, the explosive offense?
But they didn't get the explosive plays because right. the explosive players were shut down. So
not till late, yeah.
And you would think in this particular game that the Rams might have to beat the Patriots with guys that you wouldn't imagine are the ones that have to beat them going.
But to close your loop, you're right on the idea that you know how they beat the Chiefs. You talked about just taking what's there and having the ball last, dulling them to death. The time of possession was as good of a defender
you're
against
right.
Tyreek Hill
mm-hmm.
as anything
yes,
they
was.
Did defensively.
That's right.
Brand Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
Time.
The Biggs Report
with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is a wondrous and glorious day when we get a chance to talk to our guy Brad Biggs. He, of course, in Atlanta at the Super Bowl. He is the football man from the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station, and a valued friend. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you're the story, my friend. Tell us about your day. What's going on? What's happening down there?
Well, it's warming up a little bit down here, guys, although still pretty arctic for the locals. Much better weather than they had the last time the game was in Atlanta, and two teams, another day closer to doing battle. Roger Goodell spoke yesterday.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he's really good at standing there for a long time and not saying a whole lot and doing it in a very poised manner. I actually ran into him after the thing was over and talked to him for a couple minutes, and he and his wife know a lot of people in the area, have family in the area, so he was concerned about the conditions in Chicago. But didn't say a whole lot in his press conference.
Brad, enjoyed your column this morning in the Chicago Tribune comparing Ryan Pace and Les Snead, the general manager for the Rams. Made a lot of good comparisons without even mentioning their hair. That was very well done, and you got to the end, and you pointed out how the Rams got here by being bold in the last offseason. They got rid of Ogletree, they traded Quinn, and they redid their defense. The Bears certainly aren't in that position, and yet you do suggest that if the Bears follow suit with the aggressiveness that Pace has suggested, there might be some moves that you don't expect. There might be some things that happen that maybe you don't foresee now in March and April could be very interesting. What are the areas that you think that could be looked at or examined that maybe we're not thinking of?
Yeah, that's the difficult thing is, if you're going to expect the unexpected, okay, well, what could come out of left field that wouldn't be your first consideration? And you look at I start with the move of them trading Ogletree, the inside linebacker to the Giants. They were less than 6 months out from signing him to a big extension, a really big payday for his position at interior linebacker, more than $20 million guaranteed, and flip the calendar forward half a year. Yeah, we're not sure this is best for us, and so they flip him to the Giants, and they get a couple late picks, and they give up one of their picks to New York as well. So it was really more of kind of unloading, I think, salary cap money and space than anything else. But you try to look at the Bears and say, okay, well, what would be something that would be really different? And the Rams certainly needed to make more moves on their defense than the Bears did. The Rams were losing Tremaine Johnson, the cornerback, who they had franchise tagged the previous 2 years. So they had some real needs at that position. And they had more guys, I think, coming out of contract than the Bears do this year. There's only, now that Bobby Massey has been paid, there's, you know, really not a lot of UFAs to look at. So, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about Kyle Long's situation at right guard. I don't know that that would be something that would completely surprise people. But I think the overriding point is that, you know, Ryan Pace has been pretty aggressive almost all the way through. Not at all times and with all decisions. And I say that because, you know, they kept Cutler for 2 years, and that's probably the reverse of being real aggressive there. But many other things he's done have turned out to be really aggressive, and I don't see him stopping that now, not when they've been able to have a great deal of success on the field.
I'm confused. Are you talking about getting rid of some players or making a salary cap cut in order to free up money to sign someone? Or are you talking about, you know,
making an evaluation where, hey, this guy's all right, but we like this option better.
Yeah.
You know, it's just something that would be, you know.
So would that be another pass rusher? I mean, I'm just trying to think of what would actually surprise me.
Is that would that be a surprise because of his contract status?
Right. That could be a surprise. You know, you want to talk way outside the box?
Yeah.
Paying Le'Veon Bell, I don't know. You know, just something. Mm. And I don't think that would happen. I don't think they would go after Bell. But if, from my vantage point anyway, that would be a big surprise. So we'll have to see. You know, the Rams certainly shook things up after the end of last year, and were incredibly busy. You know, they lost Sammy Watkins in free agency. They trade for Brandon Cooks. One of the interesting things that Snead has done is he's traded a lot of picks to bring guys in. They traded for Dante Fowler with Jacksonville during the middle of the season. I believe that move was made in October. And the point that Les Snead made is, yeah, we're going to be short on some draft picks moving forward, but we've got our quarterback on his rookie contract only for a finite period of time.
That's it.
And these draft picks that we would use if we kept them, it takes time to develop those guys. That's why they're, you know, going for it now.
Along those lines, Brad, in terms of roster building, I think when you look at what the Bears did with Bobby Massey and signing that contract extension before free agency, you look at what the Colts did with Mark Lewinsky. They signed him to a contract extension before free agency. It's probably, as we talked yesterday sort of off the air, agent community not exactly thrilled with this trend, but it's happening. And I just wondered, how would that affect, if it does, the Bears' approach with a guy like Bryce Callahan, with a guy like Adrian Amos? How motivated would they be to try to keep them off of the market, and how motivated might the player be to get the security of a long-term deal?
Yeah, I mean, the player gets the security when there's – I don't know that you're really getting security by doing that deal before the start of free agency. When there's no risk now for Bryce Callahan or Adrian Amos or any pending UFA that's out there. And oftentimes people believe that, let's say the Bears want to sign Callahan and they're talking to him, the Bears' best offer to Callahan most people believe would probably come in that period just before his agent can begin legally talking to other teams. You know, so 2-3 days before the agent can start taking legitimate offers from other teams. So you do a deal now as a player, and you're eliminating 31 other teams from bidding for your services. Bryce Callahan's represented by Todd France, veteran agent. I would be a little bit surprised if he'd do a deal early. Amos, I think the Bears like him. I don't know to what level they like him, and he's been a durable four-year starter who's going to be looking for security. So I think, you know, Massey was different. Massey clearly got what he wanted. I don't know that it's going to become a trend, and agents don't like it because, you know, it waters down the entire marketplace. The more guys you have going into free agency, the more competition there is. High tide raises the level of all ships.
I think what you're saying here, the undercurrent is very interesting, which is that I believe many of us look at the Bears and think they've got their team. You know, they need to make a move. They need to bring in a kick. They've got their team. They got all the positions covered. And what you're saying is that part of building a football team is knowing when to dump a guy and move on to the next guy.
Yeah.
And knowing, and I think maybe they don't have their team, right? Maybe they're still in the developmental
team,
stage.
Yeah, I think your team's going to be different from year to year.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the mistakes maybe that the Bears have made in the past 20 years or so is that when they've been really good, maybe they've been a little too content with the roster and not turned it over enough moving forward. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why the sustained success was difficult to achieve. And I'm talking about division title in 05 and 06 when they make the Super Bowl, and then 500 football for the next 3 years.
And you're talking, what you're talking about too is what the Patriots do for a living.
That is what they have done to build the dynasty.
That's
is
right.
Never fall in love with your own players.
Yep.
Right. And the old adage is that it's certainly better to part ways with a player a year too soon than a year too late. And the Patriots have made difficult decisions for a long time. The Rams had way more roster questions at this time a year ago than the Bears do right now. But Snead's been really aggressive. He's a young guy who they maintain faith in. At the time that Jeff Fisher was fired, Les Snead's record as general manager was not impressive on the day late in the 2016 season. It was mid-December when Jeff Fisher was fired. Ryan Pace's record, as everybody knows, wasn't good when John Fox was let go, but they maintained faith in him. And you know what? Both those clubs have been rewarded for staying the course with the gentleman leading their front office.
That's why that comparison is really interesting to look at, because the situations are so similar in what they overcame and now the success they're having. So, Brad, before we let you go, it's Thursday. You get a sense of, you know, by now and in previous years, you know, one team is handling things, one team might not be. Any sense of what's going on down there? Have the Rams adjusted to, you know, the attention, the stage, the hype that a lot of new teams kind of struggle with?
Yeah, I think they have, you know, because they're a team that's been able to handle a lot the past couple of years. You know, I think they stayed a week in Jacksonville a year ago before they went over and played in Europe. They traveled to Denver to prepare to play in Mexico, and the game didn't happen there. So I certainly think from a logistical standpoint and putting the players through different situations, this is pretty normal for them. You know, they had the fires in Southern California that displaced a lot of these guys from their homes during the season. So traveling to Atlanta and going through some of the wacky stuff that teams have to put up with in Super Bowl week, especially earlier in the week, I don't think that's fazed them really at all. Certainly, the Patriots have gone through this many, many times, and they've got a roster of guys with deep Super Bowl experience. But the Patriots certainly don't seem fazed by the moment. They're not. I wouldn't say they're as loose as the Eagles were a year ago, but that was the Eagles were kind of an outlier. They were very different in that regard, and it turned out to help them quite a bit.
All righty, Biggsy. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
All right, pal. That is our guy, Brad Biggs. He, of course, the football man from the Chicago Tribune. We're going to take a moment when we return. We've got a lot of fun for you. We'll bring in the Hall of Famer, Brian Urlacher, next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.